This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about mustard.
That's right.
And this was suggested by listener Molly Ella, who I think suggested an episode within the last, like, 3 weeks.
I think you're right.
So
I think you're right.
You're killing it out there, listener Molly Ella. Keep doing what you're doing.
Wow, Matthew, I got to say, like, right here at the top that mustard was a little bit exhausting to research.
I think it might be too broad of a topic.
Whoa, it's really broad. And I think that maybe it will be helpful if we just narrow it down to talking about only mustard as, like, the prepared condiment.
Oh, that's what I thought we meant.
Well, no, I know that's what we mean.
Yeah, mustard seeds used as a spice, not mustard greens.
And we are going to have to talk a little bit about the seeds. Fine. Because there are some important differences between them, which yield really different tasting mustards. But yeah, we're talking about mustard, the condiment. We're not going to get into the greens.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I think I might have been able to, like, help narrow this down if I liked mustard, the condiment, which I don't. Like, it is, like, right, like, in the meaty heart of my condiment phobia. And so I'm curious to learn about it, but I don't want to eat it.
Have you ever eaten it?
Yeah.
Do you use it in things?
Like,
do you keep it around for cooking or marinades or vinaigrettes?
No.
Or? Wow, you don't even have it in the house?
No, we do have it in the house because Watson likes it.
Okay.
Like, especially, like, as a condiment on, like, a hot dog or something.
Yeah.
And I think probably we have both, like, you know, French's yellow mustard and some sort of grainy mustard.
Okay.
And, like, I have occasionally used it in cooking. Like, I'll use
barbecue
it, like,
sauce?
Yeah, maybe in, like, a barbecue sauce where there's going to be, like, 17 other ingredients and I won't necessarily taste the mustard.
Okay.
And I've even had, like, mustardy barbecue sauce made by, like a barbecue chef that I did like, but I had to, like, you know, be not involved in the cooking in order to appreciate it.
Is the issue with the flavor of mustard or, like, the condimentiness of it?
I think it's the condimentiness of it. Cause, like, I make this, this, like, salad to go with seared salmon that it has, like, a lot of red wine vinegar and mustard seeds. And I love, like, crunching on little mustard seeds. And I love the texture and flavor of that. So it's always a texture thing, right?
Okay. Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. Well, so I, on the other hand, really enjoy mustard. Lots of different types of mustard.
I'm glad.
My dad always
Good for you.
Thanks. My dad always used Dijon mustard in his vinaigrettes. And he taught me that mustard is an emulsifier.
Wow. Good work, Dad.
I think my parents always kept either Grey Poupon or I think it's pronounced Maille, M-A-I-L-L-E.
Okay.
Both of which are types of Dijon mustard. My dad also often had a big, like, stoneware crock of Pommery Moutarde de Meaux.
Wow.
Grainy mustard.
I love the idea of something that comes in a stoneware crock.
Oh, man. I thought the crock was the coolest thing ever. And I remember, actually, my dad giving it to me once after we finished it. But, I mean, these things were big. And he didn't use grainy mustard that much. I don't know what we had this thing for.
There's a brand of Sichuanese pickled vegetables or some kind of regional Chinese pickled vegetable, pickled mustard green, that comes in a stoneware crock that I've seen for sale in Asian supermarkets. I've never bought it because more than I'm going to use in 4 years, but it sure is awesome.
Mm-hmm. No, the crock is very appealing.
Love a crock.
I remember when I was writing A Homemade Life, and I wanted to put a recipe in there for a French frisée salad, frisée au lardon. I remember Brandon and I tasted a lot of different mustards trying to make the vinaigrette taste right. And full disclosure, I don't know if I would if I would still make that recipe now. I don't know if it I don't know if it
did
would
it
still
get canceled?
No, I don't know if it would still taste right to me.
In what sense?
I think honestly I might. So what I was aiming for is a frisée salad like I had had in Lyon, which was made with a really mustardy vinaigrette. You could see the mustard in the vinaigrette, mm-hmm, on the frisée leaves. And it requires quite a bit of mustard compared to other vinaigrettes. I seem to recall when Brandon and I made it, I don't know. I feel like I would want a looser vinaigrette now. I would want it to coat the salad differently.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't made it in years.
Your vinaigrette standards have loosened up.
But what I do want to say is that we decided that we didn't really like Grey Poupon, at least not for that recipe or for vinaigrettes in general, because it is pretty winey tasting.
Yes, that makes sense based on the commercials.
And then Mai had a little bit too much salt. And we decided that the best tasting sort of all around Dijon mustard, both for using in vinaigrettes for that particular salad, also for, using anywhere you want some Dijon mustard, is Roland Extra Strong.
Okay.
Which can be hard to find. However, Beaufort, have you seen that one?
I don't go around looking at mustards, but if I did, I'm sure I would have seen it.
Well, I find that one much more frequently.
Okay.
The pot that it comes in is the jar is annoyingly small, but whatever. It's very tasty, and that's what I use now.
The good thing about not liking Grey Poupon is if you have something you want to get rid of, it's easy because like a Monopoly man will.
Don't even.
I still think that commercial's funny, many decades later.
It's so ridiculous.
Yes.
Okay, but here's the thing. Hot tip. If you like mustard and you are going to France anytime soon.
Okay, I am listening.
So just,
I don't.
Okay.
I don't like mustard and I'm not going to France anytime soon, so hit me.
Well, so the widely available supermarket Dijon mustard that you can get in France, the brand is Amora.
It's
spelled just like it sounds. It's cheap, it's easy to find, comes in many different shapes and sizes, and it's really good. And it's
question.
Just basic
what happens
Dijon mustard
when the moon hits your eye?
That's Amore.
Oh, okay.
And this is Amora.
All right, I got it.
Yeah. So that's what I have to say.
Okay. That's the end of the episode.
That's the whole episode. Okay. No, just kidding. I got a lot to say.
Yeah, so I don't have any mustard memory. It's so bad that I love frisée salad, and if I order or someone makes me a frisée salad, which often a rich man in a limo will pull up and just pass me a frisée salad out the window.
Yep.
If there's mustard in the vinaigrette, totally fine with that, as long as I didn't have to be involved in the process. But when I make it at home, I just leave out the mustard.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I was remembering that from when you made frisée salad for my birthday, bistro night.
You could tell
could
in your
tell
heart
there was
something
no
was
mustard.
Missing.
Yeah. I could tell. I could tell. And that was Amore.
Okay, so what?
It was missing. Okay, anyway. So, Matthew, this episode really departs from our usual episode in that I did research not only on Wikipedia, but also in Encyclopedia Britannica online.
Oh, online.
Yeah.
So I was imagining, did you have an encyclopedia set in your house growing up?
Yeah.
We sure did. We had a 1969 Encyclopedia Britannica.
Wow.
It was these red fake leather bound volumes that were awesome.
My parents bought one, of course, from like a traveling salesman mm-hmm. type person, and it came with a magnifying glass.
Yes, of course.
Do you remember that? Yes. It had a special little drawer at the top of the box that the box set would come in. Must have been very expensive.
Probably. I bet you paid in installments.
Yeah, probably. Okay. So let's just define it. So mustard is a condiment made from the seeds of either of two herbs belonging to the Brassicaceae family. So broadly, we're going to be referring to either to one type, which is white or yellow mustard.
All right.
And then there are brown mustard seeds.
So
as well.
Are those different species?
They are.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
There's also black mustard. We're not going to be discussing it here, but that has. So basically, the white or yellow mustard has a less pungent flavor than brown mustard seeds or black mustard seeds. Anyway, the seeds.
Why are we not talking about black mustard?
Because I didn't find that much about it. Anyway, but yeah. So the white or yellow mustard is of Mediterranean origin. The brown mustard is of Himalayan origin. And the seeds of all of these are really strong and pungent, a little bit bitter. And of course, you can use them whole or cracked or ground.
Yeah.
So anyway, but the deal is to make mustard the condiment, you take the seeds. Sometimes they're whole, sometimes they're ground.
All right.
Sometimes they're a little bit of both or cracked. You take the seeds and you mix them with water, vinegar, lemon juice, sometimes wine, salt, sometimes other flavorings. Turmeric is often added for color. But anyway, the resulting paste, depending on the seeds you use and the various ingredients, ranges in color from bright yellow to dark brown.
This is so weird. All of those ingredients are things I like.
I know. What's my problem? I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, okay. I found some cool stuff about mustard seeds, which I just want to talk about just because it's interesting.
And you are here. Should we taste a mustard seed or two? And I think we should.
Okay. So basically, mustard seeds are odorless when they're whole. But when you chew a seed or mix it with water, you know, grind it up with water, a chemical reaction happens between two compounds that are within the seed. So one of those compounds is an enzyme, the other is a glucoside, and they together make an oil that is otherwise not present in the plant. This is just when you either chew them or like grind them up with a liquid.
Ooh.
Yeah. Makes an oil that is not otherwise present.
This is like what happens with garlic, right?
That, I don't know.
That garlic, you know, like if you peel a garlic clove, it doesn't have much garlic fragrance to it. But if you crush it and you mix like the, if you like cross the streams, then it starts to smell like garlic. There's a chemical reaction going on that's producing the garlic aroma.
I'm not getting much flavor here.
Oh, I am. Like,
oh, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. It was almost like an aroma in my mouth. Mm-hmm.
So we got some Canadian-grown brown mustard seeds here from Penzi Spices.
Okay. Well, so in brown mustard, the oil that results from this chemical reaction is volatile, and it's got a really pungent odor and an acrid taste. Mm. Whereas in white or yellow mustard, the oil is not volatile and has very little odor, but it produces a sensation of heat.
This is really good. It you know, it has like a wasabi, like I assume, but no, wasabi is like horseradish, but it's got to be a similar like spicy compound, right?
This is interesting to me. So the temperature of the water and the concentration of acids in the liquid that you mix the mustard seed with help to determine the strength of like the prepared mustard.
Mm.
So if you make mustard with a hot liquid and a strong acid, it's going to denature the enzyme that makes the compounds that are so pungent and spicy. Okay. So the stuff that we call hot mustard, which we'll talk more about in a minute, is actually made with cold water.
Oh.
Whereas hot water is going to produce a milder compound, a milder condiment.
I love this fact, and also it seems like the kind of fun fact that it really the person that you don't want to end up talking to at a party would come out with.
Oh yeah,
like,
totally.
Did you know that hot mustard is made with cold water, and cold mustard is made with hot water? I know it's not called cold mustard.
Okay. Anyway. Okay. So I'm going to skip over some of this stuff, but basically, I mean, mustard has been cultivated, and its seeds have been used as a spice from like the earliest recorded times.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, you can imagine this is mustard seed, mustard greens, and whatnot. I saw that they made like a yellow mustard paste, presumably from yellow mustard seeds, during the Zhao. Is that, am I pronouncing that right? The Zhao dynasty?
I don't know if you're pronouncing that right. Let's go with it.
Okay. That's Zhou dynasty in China, which would have been 1046 to 256 BCE.
Now, when you say you saw them doing that.
Yeah. I time traveled.
Okay.
Yeah. I used the magic tree house.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you only were allowed to use it one time. You're like, I want to go see some
So what I did was I used my parents' Encyclopedia Britannica, and I took it up to the magic tree house, and I touched the word mustard, and it took me back to like 1000 BCE. And I saw that in the royal courts of this dynasty, they were using yellow mustard paint to help whet the appetite for later courses in a meal.
You said yellow mustard paint.
They were probably using that too. Yellow mustard paste.
Okay.
But to be clear, I don't think this is what we think of as mustard the condiment.
Okay.
Okay. So mustard the condiment, like last week's topic, carrot cake, has sort of an unclear origin.
Okay.
So
is it possible they had the same origin?
Yes.
And then diverged.
In a hollowed out carrot.
They were both born in the cradle of a hollowed out carrot.
That's right. So the ancient Romans were probably the first to experiment with making what we know as mustard. I don't know. They mixed unfermented grape juice, so the must, I think it's called, with ground mustard seeds to make what they called burning must.
Okay.
Or mustum ardens.
All right.
Am I pronouncing that? I don't know. Do you speak
Latin?
I like
it.
Okay, great.
Fluently, yeah.
But think about this. Like... mustum ardens.
Yeah, must ard.
Must ard.
So people liked, like you know, people would say like terrif back then also.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So if you ever want to impress somebody at a cocktail party, for instance, you can tell them that the word mustard comes from the phrase burning must.
Okay.
Because you would add ground mustard seeds to must.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, a recipe.
But they didn't call them mustard seeds before they started adding them to
must,
right?
What do you think? They probably just called them hot seeds.
Hot seeds.
Hot seeds. The Romans probably exported hot seeds to Gaul. Gaul being the precursor to France.
Okay. Like the prequel?
The prequel. Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. And in Gaul, there lived Asterix and Obelix.
Yes, I remember. Yep. And they made like, what are the things they made?
I don't remember. Or Tintin? No. Where was Tintin? No. Tintin was different.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so the Romans probably exported their hot seeds.
What about the Smurfs? Where did the Smurfs come from?
I don't know. Okay, I need to say hot seeds some more because it's starting to sound a little bit like sperm.
Yeah, and people, we've gotten feedback from listeners that they love it when we mention sperm, and we should do it more often. Okay. That's the unanimous opinion of our listeners.
Well, the Romans probably exported theirs to Gaul. Okay, so languages, you know, they're just spreading it around on the Romance.
That's right. Yep, they were.
By the 10th century, some monks in Paris were apparently making mustard.
Apparently, yeah.
According to Wikipedia. The first appearance of mustard makers on the Royal Register in Paris dates back to 1292.
So the Royal Register is like, you know, is like the list of like where the royals get their stuff from.
I'm not sure.
I think that's what it is.
Oh, you think so?
Like, you know, that this is like the mustard maker to the king, and this is like the horse dresser to the king.
Okay. So around the same time, so say like 13th century, Dijon, which is a city in Burgundy, became a recognized center for mustard making.
All right.
So according to
Encyclopedia Brown. It was Bugs Meany who invented mustard, and we can prove this because...
So, hold on. I never was able to really find, like, why Dijon? Like, I don't understand why Dijon became...
Like, I mean, I don't know if there's always like a reason for these things. Like sometimes it's because like that's what grows nearby.
Sure.
And sometimes not.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Or we'll talk more about where mustard grows in a minute. But basically, yeah, Dijon, which is a city in Burgundy, became a recognized center for mustard making. And according to Wikipedia, it was first used in Dijon mustard was first used in 1336 for the table of King Philip VI.
I feel like if I was the king, I don't want to be the first one to try a new condiment.
No. Well, you could have your like royal taster do it first.
Right, right. Not just because it might be poison, but just like I want to like, you know, I want the thing that like everyone else has already decided is the best and then bring it to me. I don't want to be... But I mean,
you
I guess
don't
want to
be the trendsetter.
I guess, yeah, there's some cachet in that. But no, like I am the king in this scenario, and do not want to be a trendsetter.
Well, okay, you
I
know
don't
what?
Want to be a cool hunter.
So here's a thought: maybe the Duke of Burgundy told King Philip VI about it, because at a gala held by the Duke of Burgundy in 1336, as well, mm-hmm. guests consumed 320 liters of mustard cream, that's C-R-E-M-E, in a single sitting.
It's mustard cream, like a kind of hot seed. Okay, I have several questions about this.
So many
That was the first one. Okay. Like, how many guests?
I'm not. I mean, maybe it was the whole region.
It seems like it, because, like, I was going to say, like, even if it was like 1,000 guests, that's still ridiculous. Like,
yeah,
a ridiculous amount of mustard cream.
Liters of mustard cream. Uh-huh. Okay, Dijon mustard assumed the form that we kind of know it in today, or sort of the set of ingredients that we consider it to mm-hmm. have, in 1856, when somebody named Jean.
Neigeon
replaced the vinegar in mustard with verjus, the acidic juice of unripe grapes.
Is Jean Neigeon French for was not was? That joke is for a very small number of people, but apparently you. So
so good, thank you. So anyway, but today Dijon mustard is made with a mixture of vinegar and wine in place of the verjus. I found really conflicting things about Dijon mustard, like both that it has an AOC, so like an exclusive, like protected mm-hmm. food name. But then I also saw that that Dijon is not a protected mustard name, and that it's now made in lots of places, not just Dijon. So somebody who knows about this, maybe you can answer
I'm
this.
Yeah, I'm curious.
For me.
I wonder, like, because still, like, you know, champagne is definitely an AOC, but you can still get, like, you know, bottles that say California champagne on them just because, like, people
who's
in California is like,
it?
You know, sue us.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know.
I wonder if it's one of those situations, but I don't know.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on MasterClass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about, like, the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who Just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you if you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best. Mm-hmm. You go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Matthew, Grey Poupon was founded in 1877 as a partnership between Maurice Grey, who was a mustard maker in Dijon with, quote, a unique recipe containing white wine.
Okay.
And his financial backer, Auguste Poupon.
That is a great name for a financial
backer.
Isn't
that great?
Yes.
I can just picture him. Okay.
Me too. I picture him pulling up in a limo.
Yeah. Yep.
He hands like a suitcase of money or a briefcase full of money out and then accepts the mustard in return.
I found this illuminating that Dijon mustard is made from the brown mustard seeds, which are okay. The more pungent ones. While like white or yellow mustard seeds are used in milder American type and German type mustards.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently English mustard uses both types of mustard seeds.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know that I've got a bunch of stuff here about English mustard, but well, actually, it's kind of funny.
Okay, great. So tell me.
So in England, the earliest use of mustard as a condiment dates to 1390. So that's a little after France. In the book, The Form of Curie.
I've heard of this book.
Mm-hmm, which was written by King Richard II's cooks.
I don't think I could have told you that. Shouldn't they have been working?
You would think. I mean, how can they cook if they're writing a book? Anyway, mustard was prepared in the form of mustard balls.
Oh, God, that sounds so bad.
Well, that's where the hot seed comes from.
That's where the hot seed comes from. Wow. I'm going to get some emails about this one, and they're all going to be congratulatory.
Okay. Get ready. So a mustard ball is what you get when you take coarse ground mustard seed and you combine it with flour and cinnamon. You moisten it, you roll it into balls, and you dry it.
Okay.
Okay. And the nice thing is these could be easily stored. And then you just combine them with vinegar or wine to make mustard paste when you need it.
That is a nice thing. You're right. So like if you like were snooping around the castle of King Richard II, there's probably like a whole like mustard ball pantry that you could stumble upon.
For sure.
And be like, what is this?
Well, you know, if you went to the town of Tewkesbury,
it
was especially well known for its high quality mustard balls. Which were exported to London and other parts of the country and were even mentioned in Shakespeare's play, King Henry IV, Part 2.
They were so well known that they would hang them in pairs from the back of their, like, you know, carriages.
That's right. Tewkesbury high-quality mustard balls.
Tewkesbury mustard balls.
Anyway.
They were mentioned in Henry IV?
Part 2.
Okay.
I had to look it up because I was like, did Shakespeare write sequels or like?
I think he was forced to because some of his plays were too long.
Oh, okay. What all this adds up to is like we got a really popular condiment here.
Yeah, everyone loves it but me.
Yeah. Mustard, like by the 20th century, mustard was the largest spice by volume in world trade. So,
okay.
And it's unusual among spices. So you mentioned that the mustard seeds we ate were Canadian brown mustard seeds. So, you know, imagine most spices. I'm thinking like nutmeg, mace.
Cinnamon.
They grow in places that are like hot.
Yeah.
Moist, like not Canada.
Right.
Anyway, mustard is unusual among spices in that it's mostly grown in temperate places.
Huh.
So we're talking like the Canadian Great Plains, the U.S. Great Plains, Hungary, Britain, This is all mustard territory.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I did not know that.
I did not either. God, we're
getting there.
We're getting there. Yeah. So
I'm enjoying this.
So Matthew, you mentioned French's mustard.
Yes, I did.
Which is not French.
No, it's American mustard.
That's right. It is like the dominant brand of American yellow mustard.
It's the mustard equivalent of Heinz ketchup.
Yeah. Good point. So the use of mustard as a hot dog condiment apparently dates back to the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair.
You know, ironically,
everything dates back to a World's Fair.
Everything dates back to that World's Fair. Wasn't that the ice cream cone one also?
Oh, was it?
Ironically, you put mild mustard on a hot dog, but if you're having a cold dog, you put hot mustard on it. Hey, where are you going? The party's just getting started here.
Anyway, the mustard as a hot dog condiment, it happened because French's mustard was introduced by the RT French Company at that World's Fair in 1904. Yeah.
Did they put it on a whole bunch of things and the hot dog was the only one that really stuck?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably because they were putting it on like vertical surfaces so it didn't
just slide down. You're like, oh, I'm tired from walking around the fair. I'm going to lean against this wall. Ah, I'm covered with mustard now.
Yeah, it didn't stick.
And then a scamp would come out and take your picture and sell it to you.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember in an early episode of the show when we discovered I didn't know what a carny was?
Yes, I do. That was a really early episode, wasn't it?
But I love that now you've brought up a scamp. I felt like you were going to talk about a carny or something.
Right, you thought I meant Carney Wilson. I remember this. Why do I remember that?
Well, I got to just hold on for one more day, and then you will definitely mention Carney Wilson.
Yep. Wait. So let's go back to the World's Fair with our time machine. Do you think, like, because we remember at least like two or three things that were invented that were introduced at the St. Louis World's Fair, that there were like 30 other things that were bad ideas that they tried to introduce at the World's Fair that no one remembers?
Probably. Yeah, there was probably like Mr. Surly's foot paste.
I was like, I got to come up with something here. It was not going to be as good as Mr. Surly's foot paste. Is that like an ointment or a condiment or both?
I'm not sure. Because it did not succeed. No,
it succeeded in my heart.
Okay.
I know it's not heart paste.
Okay. Anyway, so mustard, as you may have noticed, has a really long shelf life. It basically never goes
bad.
Could
a listener please come up with a logo for Mr. Surly's foot paste and send it to contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com? Thank you.
Okay. Mustard is really acidic. It also has like inherent antibacterial properties.
Yeah.
So it doesn't require refrigeration for safety, though it definitely keeps longer in the fridge without like turning brown, which happens with oxidation.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't dry out as fast. So that, you know, that can be something that happens. It dries out.
Yeah. Our fridge just died. And so I guess the mustard is fine.
The mustard's fine.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It does not require refrigeration for safety. But you may have noticed that your mustard separates. Totally fine.
Never noticed
that.
Stir
it back together. And also, if you keep it long enough, I don't really know how long you'd have to keep it, but apparently it will get less pungent with time.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is something you've noticed when they unearthed, like, medieval mustards.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. In, like, an archaeological dig.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Matthew, would you like to take us through some types of mustards?
I would love to. As a world-renowned mustard expert, I'm going to tell you about some of my favorite types of mustard. And let's begin with American yellow mustard, which is the most common type in the U.S. And it's made only from the less pungent white or yellow mustard seeds, mm-hmm. a high proportion of vinegar and turmeric for color, and is often called hot dog mustard or ballpark mustard.
That's right.
There's deli-style spicy brown mustard, also common in the U.S. Is that like a smooth mustard made with brown seeds?
I think it has—no, I think it's a bit
grainy, kind of lumpy?
You know, I should have written it in here. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know much about deli-style spicy brown mustard.
Okay. Dijon mustard, we've talked about. That's a seedy mustard. English mustard is made from both the white.
Wait, Dijon mustard is not a seedy mustard.
Isn't
it's
it?
Smooth.
Oh, it's a smooth mustard. What am I thinking
of? Oh, my God.
I don't know anything about mustard.
Oh, my God. It's not a seedy mustard. It's a smooth mustard.
You're a smooth mustard.
on. You're a fired mustard. Okay, no, but go on.
That's one level beyond hot mustard. It's fired mustard.
Okay, go on.
Okay. Like, this is good. Like, let's see how many more mistakes I can make.
Okay.
Okay, English mustard made from both types of seeds, like the yellow type and the brown type,
That's
guessing.
Right. Yep.
Apparently strong, but not very acidic. Most famous brand is Coleman's. I've heard of Coleman's English mustard.
Yeah, have you ever used Coleman's dry mustard?
Like
mustard powder?
I think I have. Does it come in like a square yellow can,
yes.
sort of?
Yes. Kind of like the canister that smoked paprika comes
sure.
in.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Nice little canister.
Mm-hmm.
Hot mustard is a term for mustard prepared to bring out the natural piquancy of the seeds, using more black and brown mustard seeds than yellow for the piquancy, and a low acid liquid. So karashi, like Japanese mustard, and Chinese hot mustard. Mm-hmm. So this is a kind of mustard that I occasionally will eat.
What?
You make this like using a mustard powder, like, you know, the one I get is like S&B, Japanese mustard powder, and you literally just mix it with some water to make a paste, and you don't keep it, you like mix it up and use it right away because mm-hmm. it will like separate or lose its pungency pretty quickly. And the one place where I will always mix up a little of that is when I'm making hiyashi chuka, which is a summertime cold ramen dish.
Mm.
And that is one of the classic accompaniments for it. And I really like it.
Wow. Okay.
And I guess it's because since I'm mixing it up myself, I know there's no weird ingredients that I'm nervous about. But like, there are no weird ingredients that I'm nervous about in actual mustard. I just have like a mustard problem.
Yeah, you do. Yep.
There's honey mustard.
That's right.
Which is
honey mustard
produced by bees. There's sweet mustard, which is common in Bavaria, Austria, and Switzerland. I'm gonna be honest. I don't like the sound of that.
I don't either. But it's apparently just like kind of like more sweetened mustard than other mustards.
I mean, that's what I thought it was, and yeah. that's why I didn't like it.
Okay.
There's grainy mustard, which is another term for Dijon mustard.
No, it's not. It's not.
I think would I like a grainy mustard more or less than a smooth mustard? I don't know.
Hmm.
This episode is so hypothetical for me.
It really is.
Okay, so what do you do with mustard? You already know what I do with it, that one thing.
Okay, I'm going to just quickly go down a little list here. So I love mustard on a sandwich. I love French's mustard on hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't tend to put mustard on burgers, but I don't know why. I mean, I love mustard. I believe a ham sandwich must have mustard. Mm-hmm. I think any like kind of cold cut sandwich, which I'm not a big fan of, must have mustard. And I would use Dijon for that.
Must have mustard.
We always pull out Dijon mustard and put it on the table when we're having sausage. So
that's very appealing to me. Like, I know those things go together. I would try it.
Oh, it's so good. So, you know, no matter what kind of sausage, whether it's like a mild Italian or a bratwurst kind of thing.
I feel like it sounds like it. To most listeners, like I'm saying, I would try pizza.
Yeah, no, right? It's weird. It's really
weird. Sausages with mustard, I guess.
I use mustard, again, Dijon, as a emulsifier and flavor in my vinaigrettes, mm-hmm. and I use a fair amount of it. I know you can also, like, you know, glaze or baste a ham with mustard and brown sugar and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, mustard sometimes goes into marinades for meat. It's in barbecue sauce. Oh, love a fresh pretzel, hot pretzel mm-hmm. dipped in mustard. Love that.
Hot pretzel dipped in mild mustard or cold pretzel.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's about it. I mean, yeah. I really, it turns out I love mustard. I didn't know.
Your enthusiasm is, I was going to say contagious, but no, I don't love mustard, but it's inspiring.
I remember my dad's friend, Michael, who's a wonderful cook. I remember him making steak for us once for mm-hmm. lunch, like on a
Ooh,
weekend.
Steak
I know,
for lunch
this was
is
like
luxurious.
A really fancy feeling to go over to somebody's house and they've like made a big steak and sliced it. And
yes.
this is part of your dinner. I mean, your lunch rather.
Dinner for lunch.
And I remember he put out a pot of Dijon mustard and we had Dijon mustard with this delicious steak.
It's nice.
So good. Oh, it was so good.
I do use mustard seeds in cooking, like in Indian cooking. Absolutely.
But this is not our mustard
but it's not
seed
our, we'll
episode.
We'll do a mustard seed episode separately, I guess. And then I might have something to say.
Maybe.
I'll say this is seedy mustard and you won't be able to argue with me.
Okay.
I've got some spilled mail for us.
You do?
It's from listener Miriam who asks, Do you have food items that you have strong memory lane type memories about, but that have nothing to do with actually eating the food? Thanks for the show.
Oh, this
I do
is,
have
okay.
one.
What comes to mind?
At first I was like, I can't use this for a spilled milk because I have no ideas. But then I remembered one time we were on a family road trip. I believe we were heading to Vancouver, BC, maybe. My parents had gotten a big bag of like assorted cookies, I think at Costco, that they were bringing as a gift to the family we were visiting or staying with. And the cookies were Grandiose brand cookies, which I Googled and cannot find any evidence of like online whatsoever. But I remember because this was a car full of like three boys. And like these cookies were in the back, like within reach. And so my mom kept saying, don't eat the Grandiose. And like everyone in my family has been saying, don't eat the Grandiose ever since. I'm pretty sure we did not eat the Grandiose. But like, I can't even tell you like in what context I would say this, but like, I'm sure I'm going to say it within the next couple of weeks.
Great. Matthew, I love that story.
Do you have any food memories that have nothing to do with actually eating the food?
I don't know that I do. I mean, I'm sure I do, but the first thing that came to mind for me were like various jingles for foods I've never eaten.
That's fair. Give me one.
Like tater skins,
yeah.
which we talked about.
Which we did recently, yeah.
Yeah, we did that recently.
I did try those once or twice. I don't think they were around very long.
What else? Various Keebler cookies.
Yes.
There were a lot of Keebler cookies that I never tried.
Mm-hmm. I think tater skins may also have been made by Keebler.
Really?
Were you just like not allowed to have Keebler products?
No, I mean, I definitely had some Keebler cookies, but I mean, there were a lot of, I have very strong memories of the Keebler like animation.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the tree that they lived in.
The tree that they
lived in,
like the way the elves moved was like very unnatural and the animation wasn't very good, but was memorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, various types of Hawaiian punch, which
yes.
I would only occasionally get to drink. So mostly when I think of Hawaiian punch, I think of
a kid coming up to you and saying, do you want a Hawaiian punch?
No,
and then they punch you.
I think of a big pitcher, a big like round pitcher, like crashing through a wall.
That's Kool-Aid. But yes.
Oh, that's what I think of then. Kool-Aid, which I don't remember ever having Kool-Aid.
Yeah. This is good. So now we're even. Like you, I thought Dijon mustard was a grainy mustard, and you thought the Hawaiian punch was the Kool-Aid man. These are equivalent sins.
Yep.
I just checked my Bible, and they are equivalent.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. So our producer is Abby Circatella.
That's right.
We don't need to plug. We plug our stuff so much.
Like
we don't have any new stuff. We got like music and newsletters and stuff. We got a lot of old stuff.
So much old stuff. Hey, you can chat with other people who love old stuff at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
We're old stuff.
We're old stuff. What are we talking? I mean, we both had colonoscopies.
That's true. We're so proud of ourselves.
We're so proud of ourselves.
Until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
The show that nothing to do with actually eating the food.
That's true. Well, I mean, we ate like three mustard seeds each. That's worth something.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Astor Burton.
Whoa, Matthew. Whoa. Wow, look at this running attire. Mm. Wow, I've never...
I only got a tiny glimpse.
Full-on, like, bikini underwear.
Okay.
Okay, anyway, we can cut that part out
sure.
of the show.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.